Good afternoon, everyone. I'm an alcoholic, and my name's Monty. Again, I'd like to welcome you all to this afternoon's panel on the warranties, on maturity, and the fellowship. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Monty. My home group is the Sunday Morning Serenity Group. We meet in Ogden, Utah, coincidentally, on Sunday mornings. So I'd like to invite you all to stop by if you're in town on a Sunday. When the GSO sent this invitation out, I wondered where it came from. And I did a little research and found out that our immediate past delegate, Jody, had submitted names of those that were coming to the international, and my name came out of a hat, so to speak. So I would like to thank Jody and God and my own group for the opportunity to be here today. This truly is a privilege. I wanted to know a little bit more about the warranties before I got here, so I hurried and got in my service manual and started reading a little bit about them. And I found out in there that Bill called the warranties the our rights, our civil rights and service work. We had a past chairperson in the Utah area who used to say that the service manual was one of those things they talked about when they said more will be revealed. And then he would add, and it only costs $2, you know. So inexpensive information. But we have a replacement on the program today. Tim, we found out from Tom, who's going to replace him, hit a deer on his motorcycle. So I can imagine that that slowed him down. Is he okay? He should be okay. And with that, I'd like to introduce Tom Hay from Minnesota.
Hello, my name is Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. And yes, we hope Tim will be okay. I know Vancouver got really busted up, and so it's going to take a few weeks of healing before they even know exactly how it's going to be, so keep them in your prayers. So just a very unfortunate situation. So really, so I just found out about this a matter of days ago, literally, and basically he told me one thing. I called him on the phone and said, it's just supposed to be some personal sharing on the topic, the warranties, maturity in the fellowship. So I'll try to do my best for him to fill in for Tim. I guess I've had 14 years of service in Area 35, northern Minnesota, and with something like that, you surely have a lot of contact with the concepts. And so with regard to my AA service, I just really fell in love with them. But I also found that the concepts gave me a great deal of information and guidance in my personal life, too. And so when I sit down and whenever I sponsor someone to go through the steps of the tradition as well as the concepts, and, you know, especially the most important one that I see in there all the time is Bill's writing on leadership and having vision, and I just absolutely love that. But all the concepts really give us some good information to live by. I served as a panel 50 delegate, and so I had my 2 years at the General Service Conference, which, you know, the concepts and, of course, the warranties are most targeted towards, but we will also see that those are just as useful within the entire Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I actually lived vicariously as a delegate, too. My wife, Susie, was a panel 48 delegate, and so I got to hang around for 2 years before I had my 2 years and absolutely enjoyed that. So over the next few minutes right here, I really just want to share on my personal experience. That was the instruction that I had. And, you know, as with most personal experience, it's really most of the very practical stuff, you know, not any wind-blowing, mountaintop experience type things, you know. And some of it was good. Some of it was bad. Some of it was difficult situations. Sometimes it was easy things that took place. Sometimes I was in the minority opinion. Sometimes I was in the majority. And that was just part of the process when serving as a delegate in other service positions that I have. And so just remember, this is really just my personal recollection and my own experience. So just briefly about the mechanics before I do get into that personal stuff is the warranties were adopted informally by the fellowship by acclamation at the 1955 International by the fellowship, and that was 50 years ago this weekend, of course. And the General Service Conference itself is not an incorporated body, but we do have two corporations plus the General Service Board, and they have bylaws and a charter, and they follow this. And within that resolution was a statement that I really kind of called a no-change provision within that resolution that basically makes these warranties really etched in stone. I mean, to be able to make a change, you got to talk to all the groups within the fellowship throughout the world and stuff. And so they're pretty much etched in stone. Let me go on to just kind of my experience. In 55, Bill, with 20 years of growth in Alcoholics Anonymous, when he stepped down from that platform, felt that we had come of age, and we hear that statement many times. And I'm sure compared to 1935 or 45, 1950, I'm sure Bill really felt, well, we phenomenal change, you know, from kind of 0 to 100 miles per hour in 20 years, a lot of change. I believe that there's been some very dramatic and other events that really just began that maturation process really in 1955 to where we're at here today. Of course, when Bill died in 71, now we lost Bob in 50 and Bill in 71, and we were surely without, if you will, our parents, if you will, like that. And then we lost some other important family members around that same time. We had lost Bernard Smith and Jeff Norris in 1989, Sam Shoemaker in the 60s. And, you know, those are folks that really provided very significant guidance to our fellowship as we grew. So really, by the late 1980s, I guess I feel that's when we really lost all of our links to our first-generation mentors. And at that point in time, we were kind of orphans, if you will. And so we truly had to rely upon consensus, or really that group conscience, our higher power guiding us through substantial unanimity within our fellowship, both in recovery, unity, and service. And so to me, that's kind of the truest sense of maturing, you know, really when we truly had to take care of ourselves without those that guidance of those first-generation mentors that we had, and instead, again, really relying upon that higher power to guide us. So for the rest of my time right here, I really just kind of want to pose the question to us for us to think about. You know, to what extent have we been able to follow the warranties as a standard to AA's third legacy of service? So as Bill would say, let's take a look at the record. In the interest of time, I'm going to kind of put warranties 1 and 2 together, and it really talks about fiduciary responsibility by the fellowship, by the General Service Conference, and by the General Service Board. In Warranty 1 warns us of having too much money, and Warranty 2 really warns us of not having enough money. And so, really, how prudent have we been between those really two polar extremes? And Bill has some very good writing about prudence in your 12 Concepts of World Service. In 1955, Bill wrote, actually at that time, that the groups had not fully been supporting the services of Alcoholics Anonymous all the time, and he did say that profits from literature sales were also kind of shoring up the shortfall from to provide the needed services that were being asked by the fellowship. And he did say in there, he said, you know, these contributions of book sales did provide some stability to the fellowship, and we had the financial stability. But I do want to point out something right here that is really, to me, kind of a critical issue that has arisen, really, especially since Bill died, that has possibly even caused, to me, kind of caused us to really violate our own traditions and weaken our adherence to the warranties. And that is, these days, most of our literature, well, I should say, about 20% of our literature sales go to non-AA entities. And, you know, that's a good thing. That's a result of our success, literally, that literally people, not only AA members and AA groups, want to buy and read our literature, but literally other places, and, of course, the traditional treatment centers and stuff like that, are buying our literature. And so so I say, literally, that's a great thing. But that also means that there's some significant profits that are being made from those literature sales. And actually, one of our non-alcoholic trustees in his presentation on the Seventh Tradition did state at the January board meeting that literature profits are treated as contributions. So if indeed these profits are contributions, you know, then are the profits from the sales of non-AA literature, sales to non-AA entities really contributions from outside organizations? So it's something for us to really think about right there. And I found a little thing when I was doing the research for this, is there's a little statement that, you know, sometimes it's a nugget of information you read in those 12 Concepts of World Service. And Bill talked about the non-commercial sale of literature, which I think is extremely important for us to think about right there. Because in 50s, 60s, so when Bill died in 71, our literature sales were really to our groups, to our AA members. But again, a victim of our own success, if you will, a lot of our literature sales go to other places. So, you know, it's just something for us to think about after we leave here today. Are we literally violating our own warranties selling to non-AA entities and putting that money into the General Service Board or at the General Service Office into our reserve fund? He actually, a chairman of the board of Alcoholics Anonymous, someone literally that lives right here in Toronto, Gordon Patrick, in 1988, and some of you may have remembered this, started something called the Challenge of the Seventh Tradition. And if you may remember, he literally brought up this exact thing that I'm bringing up here today, and he felt that we, as a fellowship, as AA members, needed to be fully self-supporting. And he laid that challenge out to us as a fellowship, and it was just, there was a phenomenal response by us, the AA members and the AA groups. And it didn't last, unfortunately, but surely when the groups were asked, the money started to come in, and really the Challenge of the Seventh Tradition kind of fell by the wayside, and I really don't think there's anything done in that sense. You know, today, the General Service Board and the General Service Conference surely carries the message I hear from our delegate, I heard it when I was a delegate, that we need to continue to support the fellowship and the services that we ask for. And so, you know, again, just a message for us to walk out of here and carry it back to our groups. Right now, when our contributions don't support the services, what has to happen is the General Service Board and AAWS primarily adjust literature prices, and as a matter of fact, literature prices just went up yesterday, and in addition to that, they actually started adding shipping charges to your literature orders or anything, I believe, under $250 or something like that, and so you, the groups, will now be paying a shipping charge on your literature when it comes to your group just to try to provide additional financial resources to the General Service Board, again, or General Service Office for the services that we've asked for. So that also calls the question, if you will, do we truly have the power of the purse anymore? And I think how we're going to get that is when we do send our contributions in and make our fellowship fully self-supporting. You know, a good thing that has really taken place over most of the years here that we've been in existence is that we have had sufficient funds. As the warranty tells us, we need to have sufficient funds and an ample operating reserve. And to me, that means that we have it here to Warranty 2, which asks us to do that. Let me go on to Warranties 3 and 4. The right of participation by everyone at the General Service Conference through discussion, vote, and whenever possible, substantial unanimity. As a past General Service Conference member, I feel I had the right and the opportunity to fully participate during the General Service Conference. And I believe in my committee, I was on policy and admissions, that I had ample opportunity to participate there on the General Service Conference floor. The chance is always there for us to share and to discuss about things, to vote. And actually, quite often, I literally did see that substantial unanimity that Bill writes about in our concepts and in the warranties. However, there's other issues. You know, for instance, the agenda is typically set by the General Service Board and notably by the Trustees Conference Committee. You know, in this day and age of information technology, I'm just posing the question here. Do you think we as a fellowship, especially through the delegates, the 93 delegates that we have, that we could participate in the setting of the conference agenda? Some more good things that have really happened is the General Service Conference background information is now available on CDs, and that's been a great improvement. Literally back in the late 80s and early 90s, there was also a cry for more information to get all of the committee information to all of the delegates, not just the committee that they sat on. And that was a wonderful change that we saw, that our delegate got all of it, and I believe this past year was the first year when the office put all the information onto CDs, and now you and I, every AA member, if we wish, can literally have that information, because I know in our area, but literally in our spring assembly, we literally meet and we meet in subcommittees and we meet in a general session to be able to talk about all of the background information and the conference agenda items, because that's how this process really works, to get the group conscience to the delegate, and then we elect our delegate and send him or her to the General Service Conference to carry the group conscience of your particular area. So I think that was a great work and decisions by what happened at the conference and through AAWS. You know, I really believe that we can only make better, more informed decisions if we empower not only our conference members, but you and I. You know, to literally, you know, we are, if you will, our delegates' constituents. And the more that we can give them in information and the more we can participate in that process, the better Alcoholics Anonymous is going to be. So I really believe we've made substantial progress, phenomenal progress, if you think about how things were from the first conference in 1951. Just phenomenal, you know, wonderful things. But I also don't think we want to rest on our laurels, but instead look forward and say, how can we do this even better? Something I just found out quite recently from someone with regard to this last portion of Warranty 4 about substantial unanimity is something I'd like to share with you today, because I found it just a compelling piece of information, and it's with regard to our third legacy voting process, and notably the fourth and fifth ballot process. I had never heard this until literally months ago from someone, and I'd like to share this with you because it really just really opened my eyes to why we even do something like that. And what it is when Bill architected that process right there was that after the fourth ballot, there's an opportunity to either go to the hat or to take a fifth ballot and vote again. And what's interesting, if you go to our first group handbooks that came out back in, I believe, in the early 1950s, it talked about after a fourth ballot that in a group, because that's what the group handbook was targeted for, that the people that were very minority, very few votes in any kind of voting process, it was suggested that they could remove their name, and then on the fifth ballot that they could then the vote would, of course, switch to the person that the majority of the people wanted. Now, that would work in a situation in your group where we would then want to select the person that had been receiving the majority of the votes. But that obviously doesn't work at the General Service Conference in many other areas where that person isn't available to make that decision on their own. And so the idea behind this fourth and fifth ballot would be if after the fourth ballot you look and you see that the votes are pretty much dispersed over all of the candidates, it would be a common thing to do would be to go to the hat, because the body is saying one or more than one of these people would easily service well in the position that we're voting them in for. And so we would go to the hat. On the other hand, we, the voting body, if we see that the vast majority of the votes are going to one particular candidate, that maybe it's one or two votes or something like that that are needed. And I saw that happen actually at the General Service Conference many a time with trustees. As a matter of fact, almost all of our trustees have come out of the hat in recent years. But what would happen in the cases is to create substantial unanimity that on the fifth ballot you would vote to go to a fifth ballot after the fourth ballot, and the people that were voting for the minority candidate, in the interest of unity, in the interest of substantial unanimity, would switch their votes and vote for the person that had the preponderance of the votes. And now suddenly when I heard that, it made so much sense to do what we're doing right there. And this actually came from Jack Norris, with someone that had served with Jack Norris. Jack was a non-alcoholic trustee that died in 1989, but he was around our conference for many, many years, and this was shared with him in the early 80s. So just some interesting information that was shared with me and food for thought for you. Let me go on to Warranty 5. Conference actions not being personally punitive or incitement to public controversy. And to the best of my knowledge, we've really met the basic obligations of this warranty to date. You know, Bill warned us if we're going to collapse, it's going to be from the inside forces, not from the outside. And, you know, overall, I really believe we've got a fine reputation by the public, by professionals, you know, literally not only nationwide, but internationally, around the globe, Alcoholics Anonymous has and deserves the fine reputation that it has. You know, on the other hand, there's literally a few AA members know that, you know, we've been on dangerous ground sometimes in the past. There were litigation issues with Mexico in the early 1990s and with Germany in the early 2000s right here. Unfortunately, that didn't really come out very much into the public eye. You know, today our General Service Office does contract a legal firm that does scan the Internet for copyright infringements. And what that means for me, to me is that, you know, there is surely a potential for lawsuits that could bring us in front of the public, in front of the public, and that continues to exist. So, you know, in today's society, such a litigious society, we need to be ever vigilant to keep AA out of our public controversy, and that is a responsibility for each and every one of us. And, you know, that general service conference is that link from the groups back to us and to the board, so we let them know what we would like to do and what we would wish that doesn't take place. So that's one of the reasons why we need to continue to stay informed and also to preserve our own personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Now, Bill tells us in that in the warranty, says we have no doctrine that has to be maintained, no membership that has to be enlarged, no authority that has to be supported, no prestige, power, pride that has to be satisfied, no property, money that's worth quarreling about, and we have to remember that. You know, so, you know, just... So in other words, I guess what I want to say is rather than just trying to follow public opinion and norms and politically correct trends, that's just not our way. You know, instead, we need to stick fast and hold fast to our primary purpose and basic message, because that does transcend time and any kind of fads. Warranty 6, that the General Service Conference continue to serve the Society of AA and remain democratic in thought and action. You know, this warranty speaks of great liberties that we always want to maintain, and we're going to let King Alcohol be the only disciplinarian in our lives. It also states that we want to act in a spirit of respect and love, acting without haste, anger, and with respect to the minority opinion, among other things. So, you know, in the vast majority of cases and within the conference committees, I really believe this is predominantly true. You know, however, I do believe, for instance, our conference process, for instance, does not allow delegates today to review all of the proposed literature and the literature changes. And so, you know, while the conference literature committee gets to see everything, not all the delegates do, and they have to vote on things that they've never seen. You know, and so if we truly want to remain democratic in thought and action, I think we need to take a look at that and find ways to improve that process, especially in today's society where information technology can give us the advantages of allowing that to take place. You know, in AA, I've been at some meetings, and there's a gentleman that frequently says, speed kills. And, you know, when it comes to conference proposals, literally, you know, there's very few proposals that come before our General Service Conference that require immediate action. You know, sometimes waiting another year to allow for discussion, debate, I think would always be the preferred activity rather than having any hasty action. Bill was a reader and mentions Tocqueville in his writings about the conference, which a gentleman that wrote a lot about democracy. And I also was doing a little research in another AA presentation that I had made. I made a point about democracy and the need for that spirit within our fellowship. And just want to share with you a quote that I think is apropos for all of us here in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially by Thomas Jefferson. He says that, "I know of no safe depository of the ultimate powers of society but the people themselves." And that's us, the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, is the way I interpret this. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform them of their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power. In other words, what we want to do is get more information out to us, because we, the fellowship, can help to guide the future of Alcoholics Anonymous by fully participating in that General Service Conference process. Actually, Jefferson goes on, "Who will govern the governors? There's only one force in the nation that can be dependent upon to keep the governor pure and the governors honest, and that is the people themselves, you and I, the AA members, if you will. They alone, if well informed, are capable of preventing the corruption of power and restoring the nation to its rightful course if it should go astray. They alone are the safest depository of the ultimate powers of government." And Bell writes of that in concept one, that the ultimate authority is the groups, are the AA groups, and let's always remember that. So in conclusion, you know, this has really been my experience in service, and I'm sure some of it may not be the same of yours. Our experiences all are our own, I think what I saw as an AA member is that our fellowship has many times the same character defects that we find when we literally take our own inventories. And so the fellowship is a mirror of the AA members that makes it up. But I also believe that the same higher power that can transform my lives and everyone's lives in here can collectively also change our fellowship for the better. You know, we've had phenomenal success in Alcoholics Anonymous over the last 7 decades, you know, with vigilance, with dedicated service, respect for the minority opinion, and trusting God. Most importantly, we can continue to serve God and the people about us. So thank you for this wonderful opportunity to share my experience with the warranties, and may your journey in sobriety and service be as life-changing for you as it has been for me. Thank you.
Tom was a backup player. Our next speaker from Indiana, Michaeline R.
Hi, everyone. My name's Michaeline, and I'm an alcoholic. And when you've got a name like Michaeline, you don't have to use your last initial. Currently, I'm serving as the chairperson for Southern Indiana Area 23, and I actually got asked for this because I know my delegate put our name in. So, and I'm the nervous one in the group. I know I look like I'm the only woman in the group, but I'm actually just the nervous one in the group. First of all, I'd like to thank Doug R. for the loving invitation to participate in this panel. I am not sure that I am mature enough in the fellowship to do it justice, but it is a wonderful experience to study and prepare for the topic of the warranties, maturity, and the fellowship. Concept 12 is different from the 11 principles in that it is also Article 12 of the conference charter. I was surprised to learn that to amend it or delete it, three-quarters of all directory-listed groups in the United States and Canada would have to agree in writing for the change. The service manual goes on to state that the warranties are counsels of prudence. The thesaurus matches prudence with the words caution, care, discretion, forethought, and good sense. For this alcoholic, that's a tall order. Caution in personal relatedness, care in money matters, discretion, forethought, and good sense in our relationships with those around us. In fact, it's stated that prudence is the only climate in which harmony, effectiveness, and consistent spiritual progress can be achieved. Now, if you're an alcoholic of my type, you might believe a protection against needless errors and against our natural human temptations for wealth, prestige, power, and the like might be necessary to bring the fellowship to maturity. So what is maturity? The synonyms that come up in the thesaurus for this word are responsibility, experience, reliability, wisdom, and sensibleness. I've been asked to share my experience with the maturity of the fellowship as demonstrated by the six warranties of the 12th concept of world service. Warranty 1 states, the conference shall never become the seat of perilous wealth or power. Our literature tells me that tradition 7 and 2 can be considered the root of this warranty. With tradition 7, I see the prudent use of AA group donations to help the still suffering alcoholic recover from this disease, with no reliance on outside groups or agencies that would require conditions that are outside of our collective group informed conscience. I have watched the cost of literature fluctuate to protect our prudent reserve and to ensure that we don't end up with excessive funds. The recent decision to use the excess reserve funds for the International Literature Fund shows how we have matured, to my thoughts, using our experience and gained wisdom to the point of finding a better way to practice these principles. With the second tradition, I have watched the spirit of rotation work in a way I could not have believed when I first came into the fellowship. The upside-down triangle, the idea that as we take positions further down the triangle, the more members we serve, is so foreign to us who are used to the hierarchical system. I have learned from the maturity, the reliability, and responsibility I have seen exhibited in our trusted servants. As I have watched in awe the humility and gratitude displayed by our trustees, both Class A and B, and our General Service Office staff as they do AA's work, even those who are not dependent on our program for living. Warranty 2 says sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve should be its prudent financial principle. On this warranty, I must look at both sides of the coin. On the one side, we alcoholics often extol the virtues of AA service work. On the other side, we become cheap when we are asked to put a dollar or two in the basket to support the group, the district, and so on. I'm also a past treasurer, by the way, for the area. In this aspect, I still see a need for maturity of the fellowship. The spiritual principle of sacrifice is one I don't hear enough about in meetings, and personally, I don't talk enough about it either. As I matured, as I gained more experience in my spiritual life, I learned the importance of giving back to our fellowship, of my responsibility to support that which has provided me with a life I could not have even imagined when I first came into these rooms. When the reserve fund is made up of the fellowship's voluntary contributions to AA as a whole, and not the income from the sale of literature, I believe we will know we have matured, gained wisdom and responsibility in our financial principles. Warranty 3. None of the conference members shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority over any of the others. Here is the right of participation discussed in Concept 4, and is further emphasized. As I learn to participate as one member of the great whole, as I accepted my vote and my voice to be equal and proportional to those I represent. Seeing this right reiterated in the warranties, which would take such an overwhelming vote to overturn, exhibits a spiritual maturity, a wisdom and a sensibleness that provides a clear example for us at all levels of service. Warranty 4, that all possible decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible by substantial unanimity. In this warranty, I see the precepts of prudence, caution, care, discretion, forethought, and good sense. The care of having full discussion, the caution of ensuring that the minority is heard, the discretion, forethought, and good sense to try to reach decisions by a large enough majority as to minimize the potential for error. And yet, we exhibit the maturity, the responsibility and wisdom to know that in some cases where important business must be decided, that the majority may have to settle for something less for the good of the fellowship. Warranty 5, that no conference action ever be personally punitive or an incitement of public controversy. On the issue of an action being personally punitive, the wisdom of our spiritual principles tells us that such practices are unnecessary. For myself, the only personal experience I have seen has been when a group or district funds disappear and the love of the fellowship surrounds the person that has committed the transgression. We understand that the prudence we have shown, the care, the discretion, and the forethought in not acting in haste or in fear allows God's will to become evident. On the issue of no incitement of public controversy, the spiritual principle of anonymity has allowed me to grow. It is truly an amazing precept for our program. Despite what might be said about us in press, radio, or film, we have no opinion. We practice self-restraint, not always the easiest thing for alcoholics, as we develop further in the areas of humility, honesty, and tolerance. We exhibit a maturity, a wisdom, and a sensibleness in knowing that those who would criticize us could be stimulated to continue their attacks if we try to defend ourselves. Warranty 6, that though the conference may act for the service of Alcoholics Anonymous, it shall never perform any acts of government, and that, like the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous, which it serves, the conference itself will always remain democratic in action and spirit. No membership requirements. No dues or fees. No penalty for nonconformity. And yet, there's conformity to the 12 steps and 12 traditions. And yet, a bunch of drunks have successfully held this fellowship together for 70 years. The ability to work along spiritual lines in the spirit of mutual respect and love is bolstered by the knowledge that AA must live, or many of us will surely die. It is not sensible, wise, and responsible. Is it not sensible, wise, and responsible to ensure that we remain democratic in action and in spirit? The opening of the 12th concept states that in all its proceedings, the General Service Conference shall observe the spirit of AA tradition. I have been participating in general service work since I became my group's GSR in 1992. I've had the opportunity to attend delegate-past-delegate conferences in the East Central region, and although I have never had the opportunity to experience a General Service Conference personally, I have had the privilege to experience it through the reports and in conversations with many delegates, past and present. How easy it would be for this alcoholic to think that the way things are done in my group, my district, my area, should be the rule or model for AA as a whole. But as the experience of our trusted servants are related to me, I see the principles of the traditions, the wisdom that our common welfare comes first, that our common welfare is the welfare of AA as a whole, the care in making God our single loving authority, the sensibleness and inclusiveness of all who suffer from alcoholism, the discretion to have group autonomy, except in matters affecting other groups in AA as a whole, the reliability of singleness of purpose, the forethought of the division of the spiritual from the material as a protection from ourselves, the caution of self-support, the responsibility of non-professional service, the good sense of having trusted servants and not authorities, the experience to express no opinion on outside issues, the prudence of anonymity with outside entities, and the maturity of practicing principles before personalities. As I look at these principles and think of my personal growth in the fellowship, I see the maturity being manifested. Understanding the good and the God is knowing that the welfare of the fellowship as a whole is the key to my own recovery. Knowing that I am just one small part of a great whole and that my opinion should never taint the fellowship, that I am sometimes wrong, but the group, especially in votes of substantial unanimity that come from a fully informed group conscience, are more likely to be right. Gaining a desire to act humbly without a thought of personal gain. That is what our General Service Conference strives for each year. That is what each area strives for when they elect a trusted servant to represent their geographical locale and yet really to represent AA as a whole as their delegate. As I complete this discussion, I can see clearly that the maturity we are discussing here is adherence to sound spiritual principles on which this program is based and continues to thrive. I know that for me, responsibility, reliability, sensibleness, and occasionally even wisdom are only possible when I am living my life by spiritual principles. As our fellowship continues and matures even more, let me ensure that I am following spiritual principles if I am to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. Thank you.
Our third speaker today is Roger P. from the United Kingdom. Roger.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Roger, and I'm an alcoholic. Up to this moment, I've enjoyed the weekend. Things are rapidly going downhill at this very moment. I've requested that both doors be locked, no coffee to be served until 5, so you might as well sit tight and enjoy it as we go. I thank the other two speakers for telling me and you all about our wonderful concepts. I'm going to take a slightly different view from a slightly different angle, and I trust that you will give me the time and the opportunity to share a very personal view of our 12 concepts. Over the weekend, much has been discussed about the message that we carry to the still-suffering alcoholic. And I've heard over and over again the definition of that as being one of hope. Well, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was offered this wonderful gift of hope. But unfortunately, at that time, my hope was that I would drink like a gentleman, that I would find a different wife than the one I had, and a more reliable bank manager than the one that I had currently, who was hanging on to all my money and refusing to let me have any of it. So hope wasn't really a message I took a great deal of notice of. And although I hung around the fellowship for 6 years, I don't think I ever achieved more than about 5 or 6 days of sobriety in that whole period. I was the one that would sit in the meeting, breathing whiskey fumes into the room, with this instant belief that one mint taken as I walked in the door would move all traces of alcohol from me, and everybody sitting there would understand just how sober I was. Those of you who were at the international meeting this morning with Jim Estelle may know that I was asked to go up and just share a few moments about our experiences in Britain. And one of the things that I said at that stage was that my service involvement started very, very young in the fellowship. Totally against any sort of guideline or anything else that there may be, there is a moment in our time, and I was at that moment when I came in, where it was prudent for us to actually do something. So when, in fact, they put together our first intergroup in the area that I lived, they required a PI officer. And the word went out, we need a PI officer. And my hand went up instantly. I was 3 months sober. Fortunately for the intergroup and for me, there was somebody in that room who was one of, we would call, an old-timer. And he nodded graciously and said, yes, Roger, you will make a very good PI officer. Go home and come back and see me tomorrow, and I'll tell you what you have to do. So off I went and came back, and Frank sat in front of me and told me all about PI officers. He didn't really, but he did tell me 3 things. He told me, first of all, that the 12 steps were a program of recovery for me, to practice on me. He then informed me that the 12 traditions were a program of how I could interact with you, other human beings, either in the fellowship or out, because, of course, at that stage, I had very little interaction with my wife or anybody else if it came to that matter. I didn't communicate with anybody. I shouted at people. I yelled at people. I walked away from people. The traditions gave me the ability to communicate with other human beings. And the third thing he told me was that if I needed a guide to do the steps and the traditions, it would be a good idea to look at the 12 concepts. And when I did, surprising, there it was in big bold letters, Bill himself describe the concepts as a rough working guide. And to me, that was all I needed. So, here I am, I'm sat with my 12 traditions on one side and my 12 steps on the other, and the concepts in the middle, and I'm looking at this and my mind goes into somersaults. Because Bill had this wonderful ability of saying wonderful things but taking 40 pages to do so. And if you were to have the World Service concepts in front of you, you would find that within those 40 pages between concept one and the warranties, are many, 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 many words, all of which would be far too long to describe today. So I'm going to tell you my definition of the 12 concepts in about 40 words, and that might just help us to move things forward. And I will unlock the doors at the end. Okay. A lot has been said about this idea of responsibility. And when I came in, I looked at step one and said, yes, okay, I can accept that I am an alcoholic, my life is unmanageable, that's fine. I took that responsibility, but I still blamed you for the problems that I had. You know, it was my mother and the fact that she didn't love me, it was my home, it was my school, it was my wife, etc., etc., etc. So I had to look at the first of our concepts to find, in fact, that it tells us two things. It tells us that not only about responsibility, but it draws in this other second most terrifying word that I have ever seen in my life, and that word is accountability. I had to become accountable for my actions and for my behavior. It wasn't the fact that my mother didn't love me, she did. But she couldn't show it the way I wanted her to show it. It doesn't mean to say she didn't, it means to say I didn't know how to interact and correspond. And I cannot blame my mother for standing here today. I cannot blame my wife, my school, my family. Every single thing I have done in my life and in my sobriety, I am accountable for, to me and my God. So step one gave me this wonderful opportunity of not just accepting that responsibility for where I was and how I got here, and the fact that I probably will always need to be here because my life is still unmanageable. It also gave me the accountability not to share the blame with any other human being, and to take back myself and look at myself. I didn't come from an alcoholic home. If my father has two sherries at Christmas, he's legless, and he always will be. I cannot blame my alcoholism on any other person, place, or thing. I am responsible and accountable. And having taken that first tentative grasp at the traditions and the steps, I came to the second concept, which really took away the last remnants that I was hanging on to, because it talked about humility and trust. Now, for this alcoholic who suffers another disease, not Al-Anon, but On-Anon, as George calls this, you know, I have to remember, you know, that sometimes, you know, I have to keep quiet and allow others to say their thing, and perhaps for them to be right, and for me to be not quite right. Now, of course, at this stage, my wife and I are just beginning to get back into relationships. Which is a very technical word, which I won't trouble you with, but it's something about living together under the same roof. And my wife had been a member of Al-Anon at this stage for many, many years, longer than I had been a member of AA, because, of course, I was drinking for the first 6 years while she went to Al-Anon. And at this stage, I can well remember, and I have to share it with you today, because this is the alcoholic that is standing in front of you, that at this time in my sobriety, I would spend a Saturday screaming and shouting and dancing on our lounge floor, telling my wife she was not practicing the program of Al-Anon. I'm not quite sure what I was practicing, but it certainly wasn't the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But this is what it was. I needed to have this humility to allow others and other people, and God, of course, to take the direction I needed. And I needed the trust. You know this bit where they say, hand it over? I could hand it over every single day of my life. But by the time I'd got out of bed, I'd taken it back again. And today, I just have to leave it there, once and for all, for 24 hours. And that is hard for this alcoholic, very hard. But the concepts gave me this ability to put these four cornerstones together. So I've got accountability, I've got acceptability, sorry, I've got responsibility, accountability, I've got humility and trust as the corner of my sobriety. I've got the foundation of my new life in place. And then Bill came along with one of the most surprising and magical parts of the concepts. He put together these three rites, but he put them back to front. Because you see, when I came into AA, one of the things that I'd always said was that I was never part of that group out there, that real world. I wanted to be part of that world out there. because they hadn't wanted me when I was drinking, and I could never become part of them because I was drunk, because I always fell out with them anyway. But I wanted to be part of it. But interestingly, it's the second of the rites that talks about this participation. So what on earth was this first one? And I looked at it, and it talks about this idea of actually making this choice, and it actually calls the word is decision, the right of decision. And you know what? Today, I can make a decision when I wake up that I am an alcoholic, and that today I will not take that first drink, and therefore the second of the rites falls into place because now I can become a member of the human race, and the third decision comes in that I am, by appeal, able to voice my opinion without fear or trepidation. But the first decision I have to make when I wake up is, Roger, you are an alcoholic, and just for this day, I will not take that drink of alcohol. And once I have made that, all the decisions fall into place, all the rights fall into place, all the participation falls into place. I can walk into a pub now and people say hello to me. I don't go there to drink, but I'm going there perhaps for a reason to meet somebody. I can go into company and not be thrown out. Why? Because I have made that very, very first decision that today I will not take that first drink. And I still make that on a day-to-day basis. Because surprisingly, I'm still an alcoholic. Once I've made that decision, participation becomes a very natural thing for me to do. I can even become a member, a trusted member of my group. Why? Because I have taken that decision. I can also speak my mind without fear of contradiction from anybody, because I have no opinion and I have the humility to be able to listen to what they have to say. But if I feel something should be said, I will say it. I sometimes feel I carry a 6-gun round in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous with little silver bullets in it, because occasionally I use them. If I hear something I don't like or don't believe is part of the fellowship, I will say so. I haven't got many friends in AA, but I didn't come here for friendship. I came here for sobriety. And sobriety to me means a lot more. Get myself respect and I may get a few friends. If I haven't got any respect, there's no point in friendship anyway. So I came for respect. I came for that first. And I have got that back. But it's at a price. And the price is I have to speak out to protect my fellowship from those who would say contrary to it. I'm now part of the Archives Committee in Great Britain. And one of the reasons that I became part was a comment that Bill made that we need to get rid of some of the myths in Alcoholics Anonymous and get back to the truth of our program of recovery. And I totally agree with that. So occasionally my 6-gun has got a few silver bullets in and I'm not afraid to use them. Fortunately, I haven't had to use them at all over the weekend, so I'm okay. Anyway, let's move on. If you remember your steps, and I'm not going to test you, if you would like to work your way through to number 6, you may remember as it starts introducing, it says, this is the one that will separate the men from the boys. You know that little phrase? And I'm sorry there's so many ladies here, but you know what I mean. But this is, and all of us who've gone through those, and all of us who've taken other people through it, know very well that this is really that sort of point where things really start to happen. You know, we've got rid of all of that rubbish and stuff we've been carrying around, and we've obviously taken on board a power greater than ourselves and all of those sort of things in the early part of our steps and traditions. But now we're at this big turning point, and so it is with the concepts, because having come through this sort of idea of actually building my foundation and getting together the sort of decisions I need to make and creating all of those opportunities on a day-to-day basis, I am now ready to take the next 4 concepts. And they run again in very, very simple order. And it was only when I actually sat down, I'll tell you how this came about a bit later on, probably about an hour and a half. But this is the way things started. And I looked at this first one and number 6. And number 6, I mean, they talk about this wonderful words, you know, chief initiative and active responsibility in most world service. I can't cope with that. You know, how on earth do I say that on a daily basis? You know, how do I remember when, you know, it's hitting the fan and I'm getting covered with it? How do I recall that? So the words that come to me is maturity. Because at some point, I have to accept that things are going to happen and that people are responsible for things, and I've got to actually let go and allow other people to do these things. I don't rule the world. When I came into AA, I ruled the world. You people reminded me that I wasn't the centre of the world. But in fact, I was just a little cog in a very, very big wheel, and perhaps God would be better in the centre, not me. And I took you for a word on that. So therefore, today, I have to have the maturity to let go. And have you ever let go of a sponsee? When you know what's going on, and you see and you know the fear and that they're going through, but all I can do is carry the message. I need that maturity and that letting go. You see, nobody would actually stay sober with my sobriety, and I will never stay sober with your sobriety. And I don't mean that in an offensive way whatsoever. We all have to find our own. Frank sat with me in my first days, and I said to Frank, I want your 20-year sobriety now. Is there anybody in this room who said similar? I thought there might be. You know, and Frank looked at me and he said, Roger, I wish I had yours. And I didn't understand then, but I do today, because he's been dead for 20 years, and I'm alive today. I have got my sobriety, not Frank's. I've got little bits of Frank, of course I have. And I've got a little bit of every, probably one of you in this room, and everyone in my group, and intergroup, and region. And I need to say that, because two of them are sat here today, so I've got to be careful. I fly 9,000 miles, and they're still with me. I've just joined the committee of the General Service Board, and they've sent the board member of that particular committee here. I don't know how they worked this out, but they did. You know, I don't get away with anything. So the maturity came in this concept, in concept six. And it was quickly followed with seven, with this word wisdom. Now, I don't know, I haven't yet driven in your wonderful country of Canada, but I'm going to next week. Do you have these speed cameras that are around there that flash when you're traveling too fast? Oh, well, some of you might know that. We have about 10.5 million of them in Britain. Every single corner that I want to go a bit quicker, we have one of these cameras that flashes. But you see, when it comes to concept seven, it talks about wisdom, and it talks about things like that we have legal instruments, but we also have an area that relies on tradition. Now, my life is governed by two things today. Because I have chosen to be part of life, I have to obey the law of the country that I am in. And that law says, Roger, you can't do more than 30 miles an hour in a built-up area. Because if you do, you break the law. Now, if there's a camera there and I break the law, it goes flash and I lose some points off my license. And if I lose too many, I lose my license and can't drive. What do I do if there isn't a camera there? Do I drive at 40 miles an hour? Or do I take the moral obligation and drive at 30? And this is where I see this wisdom of living in harmony. And I have colleagues who have spent hundreds of pounds with electronic devices on their car that will warn them when this and that and this radar's coming up and all of these things. And you're driving along, it goes beep, 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 and they all slow down to 29 miles an hour. And as soon as it stops beeping, away they go again. Thousands of pounds. I do that for nothing. I drive at 29 miles an hour all the way. And when I get there, I have no fear of the policeman saying, how fast have you been? What have you been doing? I have no fear of any camera taking my photograph. Why? Because I have had the wisdom to do what is right for me at that time. Please don't think I don't do anything wrong. Of course I do. Of course I do. But I do try to make spiritual progress. I do try to obey the rules. Into 8 and 9... In concept 9, it talks very much about the principal planners and administrators of overall policy and finance. And it talks about active service. So what is my purpose? What is your purpose? Let me ask you a question. What was the last thing you did to help another alcoholic? And I ask myself the same question. What is my purpose in life? My purpose is to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, not just to the alcoholic, but to any other person who will listen. And I shared this morning, and I'll share with you now, this little story of Friday night. I walked down the hill from the party we had in the park here, and great fun. My legs were about to fall off, and I was feeling, you know, far older than the actual tender age that I am, around about 23 or 4. And I was really feeling a bit tired. And I got to the end, and there's this large policeman. And I think he was a Rocky Mountain. And anyway, huge man. And but a big smile on his face. And we said, you know, could we have a photograph? And we stood by him and we had our photograph taken. And he was smiling. And I thought, oh, this takes me back a little bit. Anyway, so there I am, standing next to this policeman. And I said to the policeman, you know, how's it going tonight? You know, it's a shame you work. He said, oh, no. He said, this is great. He said, I'm loving every minute. This isn't work. He said, I'm enjoying it. What message is he going to take back in the police station on Saturday morning? What message is he going to carry? Because he can reach ears I will never, ever be able to touch. And he'll also be able to reach them in a way I will never be able to do. And he is very likely to be the person that gets the next person into Alcoholics Anonymous. Not me. But by carrying the message of life, of humor, of fun, of sobriety, whatever that word is, I can carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous in many, many different ways. And this concept allows me to do that. Concept 9, which is really, if you're looking for an uncomfortable couple of minutes, is a good one to read, because it's all about self-development. And the way I see it is what we are is God's gift to us, but what we become is our gift to God. And it's through this self-development of Concept 9 that I am able to at least repay in some way the gift that God has given me by developing myself. And if you want a 9-point program plan, please, please, please turn to Concept 9, because I can assure you it's the best self-development plan I have ever seen in my life. And it's there, and it's free. Well, not quite. You've got to buy the book, but you'll all have that anyway. Okay, so there it is, all about self-development. So we come, and we come fairly quickly, to the last, I hope, three areas of the concepts from a very personal viewpoint. And concept 10, a word that I heard when I first came around, but I don't hear very much more. It talks in concept 10 of every service responsibility being matched by an equal service authority. So here we have on one side, we have the service responsibility by being matched with an authority. The word that comes to mind in my life is this word I heard early on, which is called balance. It's this idea of ego on one side and self-worth on the other. And I know if my ego goes up, my self-worth will go down, and if I can get my self-worth up, I can keep my ego down. I need some balance in my life. You know that little thing, the chart that goes up and down, up and down, up and down? Well, I had one of them, went up and down all my life till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And gradually I'm slowing it down to a nice little ripple, where the peaks and troughs on a day-to-day basis are manageable. I have some balance in my life. I don't get too excited. I don't get too angry. Of course, I still get angry, but I have a program that I can apply to soothe out some of that. And it even amazes me today, after a number of days around the fellowship, when I hear things that my son and my wife say to me about the days when I was drinking. And one of the things I found out very recently actually surprised me a great deal. I've never suffered from hay fever in my life. I tend to be very clear of colds. I don't get many colds. But occasionally, I sneeze, like most of us. A bit of dust or whatever, and I sneeze. I thought nothing of this for 20-odd years of my sobriety, until one day, I sneezed 3 times on a row, and my son's expression changed. Because every time I drank, I sneezed. And I didn't know that. But he did. 20 years later, he still put the two together. And here's me thinking nothing of pulling out a handkerchief and blowing my nose, and my son is sitting there, and all these thoughts are coming back. So I am still responsible for that message of sobriety. And I need to bring this balance in. So today, if I get the chance, I say, I'm sorry, I'm going to sneeze, but I'm okay, and I make fun of it. And he makes fun back at me, and it's okay. You know, I don't need to cause those around me concerns. I went to a meeting once in early days. I went back to where I got sober. It was the largest mental institute in the whole of Europe. And I rang from there one day when I was incarcerated, and I rang my father and said, Dad, you'll be so proud of me, they put me in charge of the kitchens. This is the largest mental institute in Europe, and his son is in charge of the kitchens. Anyway, in early sobriety, I went back to the institution for the meeting, because we carried the AA message in there, and that's where I got it for me. So I went back, and I stayed. You know how you stay at the end when somebody says hello, and you remember the nurse from here or the doctor from there, and we chatted and we got friends. I eventually came out, and I got in my car, and I arrived home. And my wife was in tears. Where have you been? I've been to a meeting, but you're an hour and a half late. That message, that fear was still there, and I had ignored it. All I needed was a quick phone call, and I would have taken away all of that. And that's what I need in the balance in my life, thinking of others and the needs of others so that my life can run in harmony with those around me. In the 11th concept, it talks about these trustees having committees and all of the things that we're supposed to have. I call it fellowship. It's the sort of fellowship for me which says, and I've seen this, have you ever seen, people come into the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and perhaps they've come in with a broken leg and they go around all the members asking them what they should do. And all the members say, well, I should do this or I should do that. I don't. I go to a doctor and I ask the doctor how to fix my leg. I go to a committee that is qualified to give me the support and help that I need. If I want to find some spiritual growth, I go to the member of my church and I seek their assistance. As chairman of the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous Great Britain Limited many years ago, we had a situation that was mentioned here a moment ago where we had problems with our computer system and we had to go to litigation. And unfortunately, the fellowship found out we had a problem with the computer system. The day after, we had 45,000 computer experts in Alcoholics Anonymous, each one telling us what to do with this computer system, which generally meant buy one from them. But, you know, if I want to have, as Concept 11 gives me, these committees and support groups and things that will help me in my sobriety today, I need expert help. And in many cases, that has to come outside the fellowship. Comes from the doctors and the priests and the dentists and those people who are there to help. And in turn, I can carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to them. So when was the last time you carried the message to your doctor? There's a definition, you know, in Britain that says an alcoholic is somebody that drinks more than his doctor. You may know that yourself. But it is important to put your doctor onto your 12-step list, and maybe, just maybe, they'll help us carry the message. So I found in Concept 11 this opportunity of using the world that I live in, you know, to help me, to advise me, to direct me in areas that I am not qualified to talk about. I have no opinion and no qualification outside the fact that I know how to get drunk, and through your help, I know how to get sober. And that's it. I have no other qualification to share with anybody other than my experience. And it comes now, of course, lastly, to Concept 12. And Concept 12 is the biggie. It's already been said it would be almost impossible to change Concept 12. And in it, it talks about these warranties, the six little warranties. And within about 5 minutes, if I'm allowed, I will try and touch on all six. Because to me, this is the biggie. 12s are always the biggie. Have you noticed? The biggie in the steps, the biggie in the traditions. And it's, my goodness, is it the biggie in our concepts. And I will actually share with you, and the word Theosaurus has already come up today. If you take a Theosaurus on the word warranty, it uses a word which surprised me when I read it. It said guarantees. So here are my six guarantees of sobriety. If I do these on a day-to-day basis, I am guaranteed sobriety. And that's as important as it is to me. It may not be your experience, but it is mine. The first of them tells me a whole series of things about seats of perilous wealth and so on and so forth. Primarily, it's telling me, Roger, you have to lead by example. You can't blackmail or force or cajole or bribe other people. You have to lead by example. You have to stand up and be counted. You have to make your own way in this fellowship. I have to take part in my own sobriety, not just watch. You know, I sometimes look at AA members and I think, I wonder when they're going to realize that this is actually for real. It's not a practice. You don't come back a second time. For goodness sake, grab hold of it and take a lead and go for it. The second talks about sufficient operating funds. And, you know, humor aside, this is the one I send to my bank manager on a regular basis. But it does tell me in this that what I have to do as a recovering alcoholic to guarantee my sobriety is I have to give generously of my time and also be charitable in helping other people. But I must not forget the needs of my family in doing so. It's no good me carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and not paying my mortgage because we will have no home. I have to take my needs of my personal needs and my family needs first, but then I can give generously of my time. And I try to do that. The only time I really get angry in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous are those that come up to the table or from the floor, tell me that they are very, very, very grateful for the sobriety they've been given and that they will never, ever be able to pay it back. And I sit there and say, well, why don't you try? Because it would certainly make a difference. And that's what I do. I try to make a difference. So I give generously of my time. In three, it talks about being placed in a position of unqualified authority. I told you I was the center of the universe when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I am no longer that. I have found that the success of this fellowship is to accept my powerlessness. That I, on my own, have no strength whatsoever. That my strength comes from God and God alone. I love that little bit at the end of that section we read of how it works when it talks about the ABC. You know, there's no human power can relieve us of alcoholism. And I have sat with people in recovery and I've been, I sponsored them and I take them to meetings and so on and so forth. You know, and sometimes I sit there with a big, chest expanded and feeling good because I've got this person sober. No, I haven't. I just carried the message. And that's what I have to remember. Because as soon as I try to take on that power, everything falls apart. If you look at my entire life, my drinking was at the worst when I was in charge. Doesn't that give you some indication of what I need to do? Now, every time I was being successful, my drinking took me to places I never want to go back to. When I have problems in my life, I have no worries whatsoever about sobriety. My problems come when I'm feeling good, and I've got a back pocket full of credit cards and money and all of those things. That's when I have to be careful, because if I'm not careful, I will take over again. Into the fourth, it talks through important decisions being reached by discussion. Prayer and meditation will intuitively tell me what I need to do. That's what I need. Before I made a decision on a whim. Usually the opposite to a whim. You know this idea about suggestions? It's a very clever one in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I spent my life doing exactly the opposite that everybody told me to do. Roger, you're drinking too much. Rubbish. Drink more. Roger, you should go and do this. I went and did the opposite. All my life, that's the way I did it. Today, however, I know that when I am faced with a decision, if I pray and meditate and perhaps share it with a sponsor or two along the line, or even with my group along the line, I will intuitively know how to handle that situation. I don't have a phone that goes to God, but if I speak to another alcoholic, God will speak back to me through that person. That's my belief and my experience. In five, with God's help, I can exert an effective restraint to be at peace with the world. At one stage, like it says, I could be punitive and I could incite hatred in anybody. And I frequently did. Today, I have an ability with God's help to put in place a way that I can exert an effective restraint. I've been very careful to say an effective restraint, because it may still happen up here. But it doesn't necessarily happen out there. So I may think it and then have to work the program to get rid of it, but I've got beyond actually doing it. So it's a bit of progression. And finally, in six, it talks about, you know, remaining democratic in action and in spirit. And for me, it's a very, very simple, positive conclusion. And above all else, this to me is what the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is about and what the concept's about. It talks about remaining democratic in action and in spirit. And what that says to me is, Roger, God has given you freedom, liberty, and fellowship. And so do I to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger. My, oh, my. As I read the concepts over the last couple of weeks and reflected on them, I was... had some questions about how to apply those in my life, and I got some answers here today. I want to thank the panel so much. When I looked at the program and I saw the other panels that were going on this afternoon, about 3:30 in the afternoon, we're going to talk about the warranties. Is there going to be a crowd here today? And the next thought was, what an order. So I'd like to thank you folks for coming this afternoon and listening. What a good crowd we've got here today. I'd like to especially thank my friend from Utah. They came, so, yay, Utah. And we don't have a floor mic, but before I turn the time over for questions, you can come up here to the mic and ask a question. I had a question for Roger when he said his age was 23. I wanted to know what my age would be in centigrade. Are there any questions? Somebody have a question for the panel? Well, again, here we go. Thank you. I saw another hand on this side. I agree. Thank you. Yes, very good. Very good. Did you hear what she said? She said, I'll repeat these comments if I hear them. She said, go home and make sure that you have a general service representative. And if you don't have one, you volunteer. In the back? Thank you for your comment. Yes, ma'am. Would one of you like to try and answer how the concept awardees would fit in with us losing the copyright to the first edition? Tom, would you mind being the first to come up here and say this? Thank you.
Good job, Tom. I would just like to share a little bit about that. To say that we should never get involved in litigation would be as opposed to, you know, what the purpose really was in Bill copyrighting any of our literature to begin with. We had an organization or a small group of people that were just going around and just reproducing the big book in the small little condensed version. They were just going to mass produce this thing. And I mean, sure, we're going to get the message over in Russia, and we're going to get the message in various parts of the world that didn't have access to it before in massive amounts. But whose message are they carrying? And one of the problems they run into is that, yes, the copyright did lapse in the United States of America, but it was still in force in the country of Canada. And so when they start taking this into other countries, is where the copyright laws in Germany and Canada and Mexico, when they started getting violated, and they may have gotten away with it in the United States because somebody wasn't watching the copyright laws. And it's in the public domain, and there's discussion as to whether that's good or bad or indifferent. To have the message of the big book out there for anybody to use as they need to, but you know, I think that I have to trust in the board, just like that gentleman was saying there. In that charter, it says that 21 members of the board of trustees are legally obligated to follow the laws, and they're the ones that are going to be sued. They have to take extreme care that our message is safeguarded. And you know, I personally would not like to see the rough arm and the heavy arm of litigation ever used by Alcoholics Anonymous, but I think it has to be, as Bill might have, I think, wrote one time, that you at least have to threaten them with it, you know, because there's always this, you know, small handful that are renegades, and they're going to run with it. And who knows how they're going to change the traditions, maybe, or change, you know, whatever they want in the wording of that once they start mass producing this type of thing. So it has to be watched, I feel.
Thank you, Tom. In the back, Pam. Thanks, Cheryl. I think there's one thing. I'm not aware that the General Service Office produces medallions, and I think that's one of the problems with them. They probably, everybody has their own interpretation of what should be on it. What do you like to talk about that?
And if I don't get up and talk about this, there's a trustee at large sitting here who'll bot me later, because believe me, we talk about this in Area 23 a lot. My name's Michaeline, and I'm an alcoholic. There is no such thing as an AA token. AA has looked at these things, and if you know, group autonomy says, if you want to do that in your group, that's your group decision. But one of the reasons we lost the circle and the triangle was because of the litigation that happened with everybody running around willy-nilly. And I'm going to share a personal experience, and I won't mention the company. My group used to give out poker chips now for 1 day, 90 days, 1 month, 6 months, and 9 months. Sponsors have to provide tokens if they want to give them to people at their anniversaries. We don't provide them as a group. When the litigation was all over, and AA decided to let go of the circle and the triangle, and we took it off of all of our literature, I received a letter from one of those companies. And the letter stated, "We're happy to let you know that AA has now given us permission to use the circle and triangle on our medallions." Now, this has come up in my group many, many times since then, that we should get these medallions again because they look so much nicer than poker chips. And as my group feels that we have to be responsible to AA's traditions, we have to be responsible to AA and say, even when we announce that we're handing out chips, we say these have no value, they're really not part of AA, but they might be something that helps you. If you put 50 cents on one side and your sponsor's name on your phone number on the other, and that might help you if you pull out change to pick up a drink. So a lot of this stuff that we see, T-shirts and all that kind of stuff, that's the fun of sobriety, but that has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yes, sir. Great. Could you stand, please?
question was asked whether, in fact, concept one equals tradition one equals step one, and the idea of one, two, three, four all being parallel with each other. And the answer is no, in the simple answer, although there are many, many common areas identified. So, for instance, in the first step, we talk about powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. We talk about unity, and in the first concept, we talk about responsibility and accountability. The similarity of feeling, but not in the wording. So you can't really directly equate. But there's common areas of thought and feeling.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am. The question is, the circle and triangle used to indicate conference-approved literature. How do we tell what's conference-approved literature now? It says it on the booklet. They've taken the circle and triangle off, but it does say conference-approved literature. Thank you. Anyone like to come to the mic? How about you, Mike? Well, with that, again, I'd like to thank our panelists one more time. And I'd like to thank each of you for being here this afternoon. And let's join hands and close with the Serenity Prayer.